It's a Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. ALICE is an acronym for Alert, Lockdown, Inform, Counter, Evacuate. ALICE training is being undertaken by more schools as lockdowns on college and school campuses become a sad reality in today's world. Recent shootings on campuses in Oregon and Arizona are the latest examples. How are school districts in the Pittsburgh area and Point Park University preparing for lockdown situations? I'm joined now in Studio A by Aaron Vanetta, school police officer in the Quaker Valley School District. He's also a national trainer for the ALICE program. Aaron Vanetta, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
He is a national trainer, as I mentioned, for the ALICE program, and we are taking your questions and comments about ALICE and other aspects of campus safety and campus policing at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. Aaron Vanetta, how does ALICE training work?
Well, basically, ALICE is a proactive, options-based response to an active shooter or violent intruder situation. So it's not necessarily that lockdown's bad, but what we've been training people in the past for years and years has, we've seen that it's not working. So what we're doing is enhancing that type of situation by adding more options. And depending on where you're at during the event and how the event's unfolding, then you could pick which option is best for you at that time.
What were people like you seeing in schools and in classroom settings when it came to inadequacies? What led you to say, we need to change this? We need to do something better to make kids and the people that work in schools safer?
Well, I think the most important thing that we're seeing is that these events are over way before the police can get there to help us. So traditionally, what we've been doing is the traditional lockdown where we hide in a corner, turn out the lights, sit there and wait for someone to come help us. But what we've seen over and over again is that these things are over way before those police get there.
By over, you mean what exactly? The damage, shooting has started, children or students and adults as well in some cases are dying or are injured?
Correct. Yeah, the fatalities and injuries are very high, and generally the person that is doing this type of offense commits suicide 40% of the time before the police even get there.
So what is the goal? And how does it happen where people will feel like they know what to do in a deadly situation that is really in so many ways beyond their control?
Well, really, it's muscle memory. This stuff is common sense. It's just not common knowledge. People need to know that they're able to do these things without repercussions from being in trouble from somebody within the organization. So basically, we're teaching them, you know, if you're going to lock down, that's a good starting point, especially if the incident's occurring right outside of the area that you're in. But you need to enhance that lockdown by using barricades and other items to fortify the room to keep that person out. In these types of situations, time and distance are paramount. So that's what we're teaching these people, create time and they need to create distance.
Does the fact that that this is occurring more and more allow people to at least think in their rational minds that this could happen? Whereas before, the fact that it was unthinkable for so many of us that you would ever find yourself in a situation like that, that would certainly put you at a disadvantage. Does the fact that we're so much more aware of it put us in a mindset where we can get into a defensive posture or a fighting mode, if you will, because of just our awareness of it?
I think so. You know, unfortunately, these events are occurring more often than they have in the past.
Certainly.
You know, since the Colorado school shooting, the Colorado theater shooting, there's been more active shooter events since then, just a couple years ago, than there was throughout the whole 60s and 70s. So these things are increasing rapidly, and, you know, what we've been training in the past just isn't working. So that's why, you know, this type of training, which is now recommended by all federal government agencies, the Department of Justice, the Federal Department of Education, the Department of Homeland Security, FEMA, you know, the whole alphabet soup of agencies out there in the federal government are recommending the ALICE response or a response similar to it. So, you know, there is a need for it, unfortunately, but the more people we can prepare and train, then we can increase survivability.
How do the drills differ for different age ranges?
Well, obviously, you know, for the little kindergarten through fifth grade, you know, we're going to do a non-fearful, age-appropriate type of training. And it's not necessarily the type of drills that you would see and be used to where, you know, people are running around and doing those types of things. It's more when and then drills. So, for instance, the teacher could ask a question, if this happens, then what are we going to do? And then you can update the scenario and change it. Well, now if this is happening, then what will we do? So, you know, the best response that we could have out of the ALICE response is actually the evacuation piece. If we can remove as many potential targets as possible, then that's what we need to do. So there's no sense for people to be sitting there waiting whenever they're far removed from the situation that's going on within the building when they can get out of any of the numerous fire exits that we have.
You know, I'm sure that for many of the people involved in this type of training, fear is an important part of it. You have to put yourself in the mindset of accepting that this is really happening, even when you're just pretending or training, and the bullets aren't real. It's not a shooter who's intent on killing people. And when you find yourself in that situation, the blood is pumping, the adrenaline is flowing, so you've got to be able to calm yourself down and think rationally. So how do you get the kids to start thinking about those things without upsetting them?
Well, you know, there are non-fearful ways to do it, just like anything else.
Will they translate to the kids being able to know what to do if, God forbid, a real gunman shows up?
Well, that's why we need to keep training and keep practicing so we can rely on our muscle memory. In a situation like that, you know, the human instincts are fight, flight, or freeze. So we need to keep training and keep training so that we can get past that freeze. You know, and that's the only way to do that, because in a critical situation, that's what you're going to rely on. You're going to rely on your muscle memory, and you're going to automatically react. And we're seeing, you know, from past events, Virginia Tech, for instance, that those adults who were trained throughout their whole lives in school to do the traditional lockdown, they were in Holden Hall, which, you know, was a total separate building from Norris Hall where the actual event was going on. But if you look at the pictures that are out there, the cell phone pictures that students captured, now these are adults, in the face of danger, those guys sat on the floor and faced the wall and waited for that guy to make his way over there if he would have, because they were sitting there waiting for someone to come help them when they could have just, if they had the proper training, reacted the way that they were supposed to, could have left that building and been way off campus before that other event ended in Norris Hall by the time he got to Holden Hall.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest, Aaron Vanetta, school police officer in the Quaker Valley School District. He's also a national trainer for the ALICE program, which is an acronym for Alert, Lockdown, Inform, Counter, Evacuate. Do you take teachers and school administrators through ALICE drills before the school year begins?
We incorporate it throughout the school year with in-service trainings. So, you know, being an ALICE school district isn't something that's going to happen overnight. It's going to take some time to implement. And, you know, the implementation process is getting everybody on board from, you know, the school board down to the parents, and then starting to train the faculty and staff, which means everybody from the teachers to the substitute teachers to the food service workers, the custodians, maintenance, bus drivers. Everybody needs to have this training. And then obviously getting the students on board. So it's not something that happens overnight. So we incorporate it within our in-service days when we have time available to do the training. So it takes a little bit of time to implement, but hopefully once it's implemented, this type of training will stick with you and you can use it as a life skill, because we're seeing that these things are happening out in the community also. They're happening at movie theaters. They're happening at malls. They're happening, you know, places of worship. So hopefully these types of things that the kids and the faculty and staff are learning in our schools, they can take with them to other places and share it with their families.
How are the parents involved?
The parents have to support the children, especially the younger ones. Those students, you know, particularly K through five, the parents need to reinforce what the teachers are telling them at school. You know, and like I said, it's going to be non-fearful. It's going to be age appropriate. There's children's books out there that specifically address this. Julia Cook has a book out there. It's actually on the bestseller list now for this type of book where, you know, it's called I'm Not Scared, I'm Prepared. It's just a story about a colony of ants that, you know, goes through, you know, obviously there's the big bad wolf who's the bad guy, and then the teacher's like the shepherd, and the ants are like the sheep, and then she guides them through the process. But they need to know what to do, you know, in situations where the teacher becomes incapacitated. You know, they still need to know, make their own decisions. But the main focus with the small ones is, you know, listen to your teacher. Your teacher is there to help you. And then the parents got to reinforce that at home and help them, you know, make the decisions and feel confident that they can make those types of decisions.
Officer Vanetta, how has your background prepared you?
I've been working in the schools since 99. So, you know, I've seen the change. I've seen from the traditional lockdown and those types of drills where we would go around and just make sure the doors were locked and everybody was quiet and everybody was hiding in the corner to what we need to do now. And, you know, just working in the schools has prepared me, and unfortunately these events keep happening. So what I'm seeing is that in incidents where Alice or an Alice type response has been used, the survivability has increased significantly. For instance, the Chardon, Ohio school shooting, you know, unfortunately there were three fatalities there, but that could have been a lot worse. But due to the fact that that coach, Frank Hall, reacted in Chardon, Ohio, that incident was over in 47 seconds. Unfortunately, you know, three people died in 47 seconds, but it could have been a lot worse because that young man started out in the cafeteria with some bad intentions. Hadn't that teacher reacted, then the situation and the numbers would have been a lot worse. And we've seen that out there in Oregon just last week or the week before. You know, these guys are there for a reason. It's they're not there to negotiate with you. So if you think that, you know, by doing what the guy says, like he said out in Oregon, everybody stand up and start asking him questions. He has some bad intentions. You need to react immediately. And I feel if those people might have had some of the proper training and knew that it was okay to use a program like Alice, then that situation may have turned out a little bit differently.
We just have about a few seconds left, but how many school districts in the area are using Alice training?
Well, as of August 10th, there was 192 schools across Pennsylvania, school districts across Pennsylvania using the Alice response, but that number has since increased. I personally trained a few different school districts on August 10th and 11th that are now incorporating it. But in the Pittsburgh area, there's numerous school districts. We have Keystone Oaks, we have Mount Lebanon, we have Bethel Park, we have obviously Quaker Valley, Elizabeth Forward, Hampton. You know, the numbers are going up and up every school year.
My guest has been Aaron Vanetta, school police officer in the Quaker Valley School District. Officer Vanetta, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Coming up, Lieutenant Black, Nick Black, with the Point Park University Police on how security is being beefed up on its downtown campus. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're discussing how schools in the Pittsburgh area are responding to the growing number of campus shootings and lockdown situations. ALICE training, which stands for Alert, Lockdown, Inform, Counter, evacuate is one way. More and more colleges and universities across the U.S. are arming their campus police officers and giving them full arrest powers, including schools in Pittsburgh. I'm joined now in Studio A by Lieutenant Nick Black with the Park Point University Police. Lieutenant Black, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
And you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is essPGH@wesa.fm and on Twitter at essPGH. What concerns do you have about the rash of campus shootings that we are seeing in the United States? What safety questions do you have? Again, if you have a comment or question, 412-246-2002, the number to call. Point Park University created its police force in 2011 and now has 12 sworn and armed police officers. What weapons do they carry in terms of the weaponry that they have, and how are they trained to use them?
We carry standard-issued Glock 40 cals, and they are trained on the average at least twice a year, one night shoot and one day shoot through the municipality training.
And I want to just I said Park Point earlier. Point Park University,
yes.
Police Officer Lieutenant Nick Black. It has to do with a place that I used to live and had to learn how to refer to the opposite way after having grown up here. Now I'm getting used to saying Point Park again. So my apologies. Pitt police officers have to qualify with their firearms twice a year and receive active shooter training once a year. Is that pretty much how it works for your officers?
Yes, we do the same, but each department's different, but we do the same.
And so talk about what that training involves.
Like the active
shooter training.
Active shooter training, we take the officers and we get to kind of a remote location, empty building, where we're able to do live scenario trainings and put the officers through different scenarios that they might face in the event of an active shooter.
And how much more effective are armed police officers as opposed to those who are not?
Armed officers, they can present that deterrence with their presence. They can also be able to defuse a situation if deadly force would be necessary. So the response time is a lot faster having the armed officers there versus the non-armed if the event should escalate into a deadly situation.
Now, are you on duty today?
Yes.
You have the full gear, and so tell us what all you have that you're wearing, if you would.
What I have on now, I have my portable radio, I have my duty magazines, my tourniquet, carrier tourniquet as well, with that tactical tourniquet. I have my handcuffs, my OC, my taser, and that's it.
And any other protection?
In my vest, in my bulletproof vest, yes.
You have that on now.
Yes.
And so this is now something that all the officers wear. This wasn't the standard issue as recently as 4 or 5 years ago, but now it is.
Yes.
And does that also change the mindset of the officers who work at a place like Point Park?
It doesn't really change the mindset. It's just, you know, it's an eye-opener when you're down in the atmosphere of where we're at, because we're in downtown Pittsburgh, so your awareness level has to be very heightened at all times, because you're encountering a lot more people working in the city than you would in the municipality, because you're out and about on foot. You're interacting with people all day long. So I always tell the officers, you know, safety and your awareness always has to be heightened.
What unique challenges does an urban campus like Point Park's present?
Challenge that it might present, if the buildings, I would say, as if they're going to be a public building or if they're going to be a secure building. I know Point Park was actually named 16th overall through the Cape Campus Safety Award Summit. Out of 4,000 schools, Point Park ranked 16. So they finished in the top 25 for their safety on campus. So we definitely take a proactive approach in securing our buildings with the officers, with the monitoring of the CCTV cameras, and also with the door access and the swipe cards on the doors. We have two public buildings, which would be Academic and Lawrence Hall, but the other dormitories are secure buildings, to where you have to actually have a card to gain entrance into the building and bypass the desk attendant.
I would imagine that officers like yourself really have to have your head on a swivel, as they say in sports, just in terms of looking at what's going on, just because of your location, you have from all directions people coming from events in the city, from restaurants, from work. I mean, you're in the middle of a major American city, and those kinds of challenges, I would think, would be, you know, keeping you on your toes, if nothing else.
Yes, definitely, definitely. So we definitely take a proactive approach with doing that. Like I said, I always tell the officers to just awareness, you know, just assessment. When you're out there and about, people take, you know, they could get complacent. They think they work for the university, so therefore it's going to be a laid-back atmosphere. But when you're in the city, you know, you're going to have more human interaction and human encounters on a day-to-day basis than you would in a municipality where you're patrolling from your vehicle and your interaction is based upon either a traffic stop or a call that brings you to that place. But with the university, you're out there, you're on your foot, you're on patrol, you're in the cruiser, but your main work is you're going to be using your patrol in and around the campus. And that interaction downtown's always going on. It doesn't sleep, you know. So Pittsburgh's always thriving with, like you said, with the sporting events, with the nightlife, with the overnight life, and back again with the business life in the daytime.
And are there rules that you can enforce? Can you take control of what is actually campus property within that urban area, within the downtown area of Pittsburgh, and say, you know, for example, are there things you can do when it comes to stopping someone, stopping a motorist, because it's Park Point campus property as opposed to just another part of the city?
Mm-hmm. We have our jurisdictional limits within Point Park, which stretch out from Smithfield Street, like all the way up to Stanwicks, and then from Fort Pitt Boulevard all the way up to Forbes, which will touch base with Market Square and as well as the Mond Wharf. So it's like that lower square section that we have, which we patrol within those grounds.
412-246-2002, the number to call to talk with our guest, Lieutenant Nick Black with the Point Park University Police. Let's go to Elise in the South Hills with a question. Hi, Elise.
Hi. I was wondering if there's any specific guidelines or advice for faculty to be better prepared, if we can be at all.
You are a teacher, Elise?
Yes.
Okay, and so you're kind of wondering what you can do to be better prepared to make your students safe and yourself as well.
Yes, and to potentially identify students that are at risk, if possible.
That's an interesting question. So what can faculty do, Lieutenant Black, to make themselves safer and also identify students who might be at risk or pose a risk to others?
Well, as far as what could they do, faculty, they could definitely do an assessment of where they're teaching at. So basically a safety assessment of the room that they're in. Can you barricade that door? Is there a desk in the room? How many desks are in the room? Or is there chairs? Does the door open out? Does it open in? Is there a lock, external lock on the door, or is there an internal lock on the door? Can you stack stuff on the door? Would it still be able to be opened up? So there's numerous factors that would start with the room that you're in, secondary, an exit. Where's there an exit? How far is the exit from where you're at in correlation to the building? Can you get out of the building fast if need be? So there's several factors that go into play. And also one thing, well, is being aware of your room to see what type of safety measures you can impose when you're in there.
And in terms of identifying students, that has to be a terribly difficult thing to do. Are there telltale signs, something that a teacher could see that would say, I need to talk to somebody about this. I need to go to security. I need to go to the campus police and make them aware of this particular individual or individuals.
I mean, you could have a suspicious person that you could think might be suspicious, but I think, you know, anybody at any given time could impose danger on somebody. But somebody could stick out more along the lines of somebody who isn't. So I think that's where you report it to your local police department or your campus police or to the dean of the department, and therefore the right people can get in contact with you and follow up with you, and you can report that person, because a lot of times those indicators start whenever someone's missing those indicators to where they see them at first, but then they're not addressed, and then it can escalate into a situation.
And the indicators would be what?
Someone who is just odd. You just really know when you're around somebody, that person is just unusual. The person is just very suspicious. They're, you know, a lot of people categorize them as, you know, what you have is you have antisocial. It's just someone who just keeps it himself, somebody who just isolates himself, somebody who just exhibits a very strange behavior, and you can just report it. It's best to see than the actual tell, because you just know, you get that feeling in your body to where a person says to themselves, there's just something about that person. So if you think that at one point, then you should go ahead and just, you know, make contact and do the right thing.
That's something you would encourage someone to do, even if you're taking the chance that person is perfectly fine?
Absolutely. Once again, taking that proactive approach, definitely.
Before we wrap up, just a few seconds left, but what can you tell us about the instructional video created for Park Point, an active shooter training video modeled after Alice?
Yes, we incorporated Chief Bisong, the chief of the departments. It was his idea to go ahead and along the lines of getting a video, which we use our officers on our campus with the support of Alice. So it's an Alice trained video. We impose Alice with our university. All incoming freshmen watch the video. All new hires watch the video as well. And faculty and staff, we put it out there for them to partake in our classes, to learn about the Alice, to see what they can do to make themselves more safe on campus.
Well, it sounds like it's a very important video and something that can help make the campus safe. And that's the goal at campuses all around Pittsburgh, including Point Park University. We've been talking with Lieutenant Nick Black with the Point Park University Police. Lieutenant Black, thank you so much for taking the time to visit with us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we'll observe Columbus Day by going aboard exact replicas of the Nina and Pinta docked along Station Square in the Monongahela. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.